This is the Business Breakfast with Owanda on Jazz FM. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.
Let's talk Huawei first with Craig Earlham this morning. And Huawei, now, the decision appears to be, is there a core involvement of Huawei or is there a fringe involvement? Because I can't see, I'm not an expert, I don't see the difference between the two. The United States is saying there's no such thing as a fringe involvement of a company like that.
This does seem to be the view. And again, I'm no expert on these kind of technologies, but it is, does seem to be a debate between, can you stop something accessing the core data, or can, or are you effectively just leaving yourself intentionally susceptible to infiltration of this data when you don't, when you're not fully in control of it and you don't know who's going to be using the data? So obviously the US view on this is, if you don't have any Huawei equipment, then there's no way of them infiltrating and passing on the data which you don't want them to get. Boris Johnson seems to believe that there's a halfway house here where you can have it involved in the non-core infrastructure and promote 5G at a time when the rest of the world's adoption is still low. We have to remember there are four networks currently that do offer 5G services, but the uptake is so far extremely low. It's still extremely expensive. Three of the current providers already actually use Huawei equipment and on almost on top of 4G infrastructure. So there's obviously still a big leap needed if we are going to fully adopt 5G. But at the moment, the issue that the UK has is that the Huawei are far ahead of any of their competition. And this was almost the reason behind Boris Johnson's comment a couple of weeks ago. It was a case of, well, if not Huawei, then who? Because I've promised to deliver improved infrastructure, improved internet speeds, improved accessibility as part of my my manifesto pledge. And yet you're telling me not to use these, but also not who to use as an alternative.
And so the leverage here is the United States and the, you know, the longed for trade deal. It's obviously, I mean, it was never going to be non-complicated, was it? But it's just another issue to throw into it, really. Even though I mean, we've had so many different messages about this, haven't we? And I think business has been complaining about it, that, you know, the Chancellor said at Davos, didn't he, that it was the EU that was our priority to get a deal done with first, and then there's a feeling about, well, is it the United States, because President Trump's a part of the, you know, great deal. I mean, these are just big bargaining chips being thrown around in the air, aren't they?
Yeah, we're oddly seeing this kind of this tactic being used, and I hate to say it, it's almost very Trumpian in that you kind of schmooze whoever it is that you want to engage with at this very moment in time. So you speak to some cabinet ministers and they'll be saying the US is our priority, this is what we promised as part of the referendum, we want to get this massive, ambitious, huge step forward trade deal with the US, and then you have Sajid Javid coming out saying, but the EU is our priority. Both, like, almost both of these can't be true in a sense. So yeah, it does seem like everyone's trying to schmooze every side. The difficulty obviously does come with the trade deal. Now, what I find really interesting is, while the US is very much being quite forceful in trying to convince the UK that this is not the road to go down, that they should drop Huawei altogether, they have also unusually kind of steered away from suggesting that it could hugely jeopardise trade talks. Now, whether that's because that's not technically true, or whether it's because they are just adopting a slightly different tone when it comes to the UK than they do typically from other countries, is not quite clear yet. It does almost feel like the latter, as if they don't want to come at the UK with the same kind of hardline stance. They very much want the UK on side, and they don't immediately before a trade deal's even discussed want to almost turn the UK media against the UK, against the US in these talks, in much the way that obviously at times you've seen, for example, with regards to the EU. So they're almost treading a fine line, but that almost makes, in a way, Boris Johnson's decision all the more difficult, because it seems that no matter which option he chooses, he is going to disappoint someone and potentially jeopardise things in the future.
Coronavirus fears continue, as you'd expect. Let's remind ourselves that the last time something like this happened, the SARS virus, all those years ago, global growth down by 1%, but it did recover quickly. Do you think that, and again, it's very difficult to get detail out of China, obviously being the place that it is, do you feel as though containment is much more part of a national health policy as far as a country like China is concerned? And indeed, let's the rest of the world.
Well, I think it is very much with a view to the rest of the world as to why they have taken such a strict approach on this occasion. Obviously, you look back at 2003 and people are still critical of the slow, almost cover-up action taken at the time, which led to more of a widespread and ultimately more contagion. So they do seem to be taking a far stricter approach right now, talking about whistleblowing, saying that if you're hearing about people trying to make cover-ups, then you can report it here, and almost trying to send a message to the world that we are on top of this, we are doing everything we can possible to contain. Obviously, the time of year doesn't really help this matter when you've got hundreds of millions of people travelling around the country to celebrate the new year with family, which just encourages the spreading. But you can see that there are huge containment efforts being made, and as of yet, the numbers outside of China are still extremely low, which would suggest that these efforts are working. But again, this is something that's moving extremely quickly. The numbers, the number of fatalities is now above 100, I believe. The number of people who have actually got the disease has increased into the thousands. But at this moment in time, it does seem outside of China, the numbers are still extremely low, and that is ultimately very encouraging. But where we were a week ago to now is two very different things. Where will we be in a week's time is the all important and very difficult question to answer.
Talk about trade now, and it looks like a clash on fish and financial services. Ireland is saying that the island, rather than the island of Ireland, Ireland itself, ERA, is saying that the city of London will lose access to European financial markets unless the UK opens up its coastal waters to continental, if I can put it like that, fishing boats. The truth of it is, as I understand it, that we are relatively okay as far as our coastal waters are concerned. It's the EU boats that need access to them to fulfil their necessary businesses.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is the thing, and it's become such a weird hot point in terms of the whole Brexit discussion. Fishing has long been used as an example of where we need to regain our sovereignty and regain control of our shores, etc. And a lot has been made of what is fundamentally a tiny part of our actual economy and affects very few people day to day. So it seems one of these very strange areas whereby if Boris Johnson and his team does offer these things up as part of negotiation, which most people would agree is probably okay, and it's not in terms of when you're exchanging for something like access to financial services, which is a far more important, a far bigger employer, a far bigger revenue generator, most people would say, well, that's a sensible thing to offer up, and if anything, we gain a heck of a lot more than Europe would. But because it's become such a politically sensitive topic,
indeed,
then it becomes far more difficult for Boris Johnson
and we know where this is going, don't we? I mean, if we were to achieve a notable victory there, Scotland would cave in, wouldn't it, as far as Boris Johnson is concerned, say thanks very much indeed, we'll be voting for you. That's part of it, isn't it? And then the other impoverished or the less successful and poorer areas around the east coast in particular of England would also be siding up with that. It'd be a good political move. High profile as well. You know, who cares about the city? Well, we know what the statistics are, but actually, fisher folk, that's a big one.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen the divisiveness of politics for quite some time, and obviously, while the city, for example, is a massive, like say, revenue generator, it's a massive contributor to the tax purse. It's and it's a huge employer, obviously, within the UK. It is also for much of the last decade, for longer than the last decade, being demonised. So there's large parts of the country which would look at it and say, well, we are willing to compromise on aspects of the city in favour of our fishermen, etc. And like I say, because it's been such a political tool throughout this for now 5 years, it's like I say, it's an extremely difficult one for Boris Johnson to necessarily concede on, even if you just purely look at the numbers, then it's something that makes sense. But I mean, who knows? I mean, in a year's time, we're probably not talking about fishing anymore, and we've moved on to something else that's going to be equally divisive and maybe even far more boring.
Well, here's something which isn't. I mean, we're going to hear about HS2 this week, aren't we? And we're probably going to hear about perhaps Northern Rail being nationalised, as Southwestern Railways maybe being nationalised. The railways are in trouble. We've rehearsed this argument many, many times. There doesn't seem, as far as... Well, HS2 is a different one. maybe we should talk about that tomorrow or on Thursday when we know a little bit more about it. I don't understand how anybody can make a decision about it, given the fact that we don't even, nobody can agree how much it's going to cost finally. Maybe that's not an issue. But nationalisation of the railways, I mean, that's come right back on the agenda, hasn't it? And chuck into that extra funding that the Tories are going to give for the Beeching rail cuts. All, what, 50 years ago, £500 million, Labour saying it's not enough. Bit of a mélange, I would have thought.
I mean, it's almost all part of the same conversation, ultimately, because it's all to do with infrastructure in the UK and how fit for purpose it ultimately is. So when we're talking about the Beeching, then we're talking about tracks which were cut off because they weren't they weren't profitable, so they weren't viable from a purely economic standpoint. But we've got to remember that infrastructure in the UK isn't always just about the economy, isn't just always about the economics, isn't always just about can we make a profit from this. It is about connecting all parts of the country and ensuring that everywhere can thrive, even if the almost the hub of the country being being London or being other major cities is where the vast majority of the almost the kind of business takes place. You need everywhere to thrive, and for that you need top quality infrastructure. So it is all part of the same conversation. And looking at these routes which were previously open and previously closed, I think is an important aspect of that, because when parts of the country start to feel left behind, then we see what that ultimately leads to. It leads to a lot of resentment, and that's why we're looking at things like internet. We're talking about it. This is infrastructure to connect it, the large parts of the country rather than just the major cities. And when we're talking about HS2, when we're talking about the reverses of these on the rails, but also the nationalisation, it is all to do with ultimately dissatisfaction with how the infrastructure in this country is currently worked out and the decisions that are made. We've spent a decade talking about HS2, and we're still talking about the fact that it may be scrapped. I think that's completely atrocious.
And we'll be talking about it later this week, naturally. Okay, Craig Earlham, thank you very much indeed.
The Business Breakfast on Jazz FM with Oanda. Online trading, currency data, money transfers.